Hello, welcome to episode 14 of the Final Boss Blues RPG Maker podcast. Today I'm joined by my regular host, Raynard Frost.
Yo.
And I'm also joined by our guest host, Solomon.
Hello.
And great news, today is Raynard Frost's birthday.
Yay!
Sir. Well, we're not going to sing, though, so let's move on into our player play for the day.
Thank God.
So today we're looking at Violent Whispers by Dark Metamorphosis. And you, as always, you can find it in the RPG Maker web forums in the project development section.
Wait, and you didn't say his name right.
Dark Metamorphosis.
Dark Metamorphosis.
Dark Metamorphosis.
Yeah, Dark Metamorphosis.
Symphony of the Night. You gotta say it like when you get the power. Like
Dark Metamorphosis.
Alright.
PS1 sound bites.
Okay. So the game is called Violent Whispers. And it does have a demo. We haven't played the demo. We're going to be talking about the game thread, as we always do. So, Raynard, do you want to kick us off and read the story section?
Yes! Let me sit upright so my diaphragm is perfect to be British. Let's see here. So, yeah, this is Violent Whispers. Looks pretty fantasy-ish. And the story goes as follows. Our story begins in the year of 1200 AC, where the lands are flourishing and the inhabitants are living in peace. The differences in these societies are wide, but they have managed to respect each other to the limit as to avoid any conflicts that will lead to war. Now remember, kids, you want to respect each other to the limit. At the northern part of Aspicio, in the regions of Asper, the king of the realm has discovered an ancient scroll leading back to the history of ancient Serena. The scroll reveals information regarding an artifact that was left during the first crisis, hidden away under the surface of the world. At the same time, a young man wakes up in a rainy forest without any memories about his past or his life. The only recall he discovers is a whisper inside his head, repeating his name. With a burning feeling inside his body and a sharp echoing sound infecting his mind, he stands up. The game revolves around this man and his journey to find out who he is and find clues about why he can't remember anything about himself. But what plans are involved in the retrieving of the ancient artifact that was recently discovered? And what is the meaning of the violent echoing whispers inside the young man's head? That is a tale not yet to be told.
Amnesia, really?
Amnesia!
Really?
Cliche number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Really?
Actually, it's more like cliche number 5.
Yeah, like, amnesia's all over the place.
Early ones.
Yeah, so based on this story,
garbage.
Like, it's just cliche, like, just bonkers cliche, right?
The
like,
first there's an artifact. Has nothing to do with what's going on. That's all stuff you can describe when we're getting into the game. I read that first paragraph and I'm like, don't care, don't care. Ancient artifact, don't care.
I mean, it sets the setting, but maybe there's, I don't know. But like the whole idea, there's an artifact, and then a dude wakes up in a forest with amnesia, like,
and voices in his head.
Yeah, we've seen this before plenty of times.
Yes.
So let's look at the main characters.
Yes. Note that the game is in a rather early state, so some of the information is not added, and some information might change later on. We've got a main character called Vincent with long hair.
We have to mention here that he has generator portraits, or at least like they're edited RTP portraits, and he has a spoiler below them, but like not including them, so it's like a huge face and then a spoiler with like a few lines of text, which seems a little a little backwards organizationally.
But yeah. Vincent is the main character, and he has long black hair. So we got a guy named Vincent with long black hair, which is something I've never seen before.
Isn't that from
Final Fantasy?
Fantasy
VII? and then we've got...
His hometown is unknown.
There's a huge cast of characters, and they're all RTP face sets. My favorite being Ryze, because his bio is working on it, and he's 28. And he's got a scar. He's got cool hair.
He looks like you.
He doesn't look like me. My hair is not nearly that long.
He looks like your personality would look.
My personality? He looks like how I feel. I look like Dojima. Anywho.
Then there's some NPCs. Of course, there's a mysterious girl, and there's a king. And
King Zephyr. King Lightning. Sona. Oh, he should make her name be Cruz. So it's like Soma Cruz, but it's a girl version with black hair, so it's opposites.
Okay.
A mysterious young girl. Well, that's a Castlevania reference, but you don't play Castlevania.
I do not.
A mysterious young girl will show up a lot during the party's quest. Can she be trusted?
Yeah, everything here seems like we've seen it before, right? Like, I could think that's what I'm saying about the game so far. It's nothing new, right?
Yes.
I mean, kind of well put together, but there's not much substance in what there is.
No, it's not well put together at all, because there's all these line breaks between everything. Like, you don't need a line break up and down for chapter one. Like, I know what you're trying to do, where you're trying to make it look like it's a banner, but it just looks hodgepodge.
And it doesn't bother me that much. Like, I see what you're saying, but I find that kind of irrelevant. Solomon, any thoughts on the characters before we move to screenshots?
I have to agree with you that it's kind of cliche. I'm looking at these characters and I'm really not finding anything other than just kind of unique names, kind of meaningful names. I could take that with me, but as far as people being skilled in magic and you know, I'm working on the profile, you know, and stuff like that. I'm not really seeing anything with substance. It's just kind of, again, like you guys have been saying, I've seen this all before. So
yeah, exactly. The main character is a swordsman with amnesia. The second main character is a female healer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you didn't
see that?
I couldn't
tell by her glasses and fancy hat.
Yeah, she's...
And then let me guess, I'm not even going to read her profile, but the third character, she is a rogue girl, annoying. Younger sister! Yes, we got a younger sister. All right. Every anime needs
that. She has a rough childhood.
And then we got Amazon warrior. Amazon warrior. We've got the aggressive woman's warrior. No anime is complete without that. Shane, archer, best friend. Let me guess. Best friend? Best friend? Best friend? Oh, no, wait. The guy's got amnesia. He doesn't have any best friends.
Yeah. That one won't work.
Okay.
He doesn't use magic.
He was forced to grow up without any technology or advanced magic. He had his hunt for his own. Okay, so he's the hunter guy. Let me guess. He probably likes girls. And the Rise, the generic tough guy, is trying to work out. So basically, this guy has played his... This guy likes anime. I can tell. He likes anime. And he's like, I need these anime/RPG tropes. These are the types of characters I need. I'm going to put them in my game. So this is where story takes precedence over gameplay. Those were to him. This is what he did. Is he just went, I want these characters because I want these archetypes filled in my story. It's not, this is my game and I need these types of characters in my game.
So want to look at the screenshots?
Yes.
The title screen?
The title screen is terrible. We've got generic Photoshop garbage. I mean, the background is fantastic. I like the background, but the title thing he's got is just an explosion of Photoshop.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of Photoshopped all the characters together. And there's no window showing around the options. The options are just kind of there on the screen.
Yeah,
it looks
it's kind of weird with all the characters right behind them. And yeah, the characters aren't even perfectly centered, right?
I mean, like in a game, okay, when you have a menu where there's no window behind the options, that's like in Resident Evil. But when they do stuff like that, there's nothing behind it. I mean, there might be some scenery behind it, but there's nothing that draws my attention behind the menu options.
Yeah, you have to be able to read it clearly.
Exactly. So having all these faces behind it is just kind of terrible. And then we've got this bearded guy on the right who's not even in the character section.
I think that's the king. I think his graphic changed.
Maybe. Oh, that might
King
be.
Zephyr.
Yeah, demo version. But yeah, the title screen, you could have just had this generic fantasy background and then had just simple text, violent whispers, and been perfectly fine.
Yeah, I can hear that. I mean,
you wouldn't even need a window around your options. That'd be fine. But you're putting in these portraits that dramatically, like your title, your portraits, and the background do not match each other at all. They all contrast each other.
Yeah.
I mean, the Violent Whispers logo looks like it would be on fucking The World Ends With You or a Kingdom Hearts game. The background is generic fantasy stuff that looks great. It's well painted and stuff like that. And then you got these RTP stuff that looks cartoonish,
yeah,
in comparison. So this is a huge that's why it's bad. It lacks consistency. There's no consistency here at all.
There's consistency in the maps. Let's move on to those. I mean, we've seen these graphics before. These are Celiana's tiles, I think.
Yes, also known as RTP 2.0.
yeah,
which is good because I mean, the RTP itself can only go so far, so we add more in the RTP style. That means you got more of an RTP to work with. But he's got good map layouts. There's clear paths. Things don't feel too cluttered. Guy wakes up in a forest. This isn't a forest. It looks more like a park.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Exactly. Like, it says it's a forgotten forest, but it's like not there's just path and there's... Enough. I mean, it's kind of almost too structured. Like, you know, you have the dirt path, and then there's, like, hedges around it or the tall grass. But the way it's arranged, it's, like, it's so perfectly around the path, it's a little strange to me.
Well, I mean, you're looking at the Forgotten Forest, and the first screenshot has a lamp post. I mean...
Narnia.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Like, if it's so forgotten, why are there man-made structures in there?
Exactly. Well, it's a park they made and then forgot about it.
Yeah, like the tutorial one, it has a bench with a lamp next to it. That doesn't seem very forgotten.
The message box bothers me quite a bit. I don't know what it is about it. It's just, it's very simple. And I understand that this is a demo and it's in progress. But when you're, I feel that when you're writing it out, it leaves something to be wanted out of it.
In the forest screenshot here?
Yeah, the forest screenshots.
Because that's just, that's like the regular message box where he just makes it have a black background. Like, there's a checkbox for that.
There's three options you can do default with the game. Or in the editor, you can either have your window, you can either have your window background, you can have no background, which is where he's got the tutorial message. He's got no background. And then on your feet, Vincent, where it's the transparent, that's the third option. You can just have a transparent black for the background, which people use for like tutorials or thoughts and shit.
Yeah, it looks like he's using that for the echoes inside his head.
Yeah. And then the tutorial screenshot is mid lightning because it's a stormy night. Can't forget that.
Oh, is that what it is? I thought the screen was like faded white to make a tutorial, but yeah, I can see that it's potentially within like a. He just took it during a lightning blast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this whole Forgotten Forest looks like Forgotten Central Park. So definitely need to put more forest in your Forgotten Forest. I mean, it's good to have paths, but at the same time, you've got statues and lampposts, and there's not nearly enough... the trees are too spaced out. And you've got a mixture of trees. You've got these little short trees. If you're using these short trees, those are meant to be tall trees. These are meant to be the tallest trees. Otherwise, they look like bushes.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
especially
you
when you've got
the
these
other.
Large pine trees next to it. No, you got to pick one or the other.
Yeah, use different trees in different areas.
I've been waiting for an example. This is a perfect example of people taking two different styles of tiles that look good on their own. And mix and matching them, and they don't look good together.
Yeah, because
they're not consistent with proportions.
Yeah, we see that all the time too. This is a good example of that, and how I would suggest people not to do it. Like, if you have an area, try to make the area consistent within itself. Like, you can use the tall trees in another area of the game where they're not directly next to something else.
Exactly. Yeah, that you could get away with, but. In this thing right here, we got them next to each other. It's just, all right, you got these trees at a kind of three-quarter angle, and then you got these trees that are kind of almost a horizontal angle, and they're way taller. It's not consistent. But let's move on to the secret cave.
Yeah, I have a big problem here with the secret cave. And
it
that's
should be the secret castle.
And I, and my big problem here is the volcano rocks with the red bottoms.
Mm-hmm. Volcano rocks?
Yeah, do you see those right there? They're these... tall black rocks with red bottoms, like if they were in lava or something, and they're just on top of like brick.
Yeah, they're on the roof.
Yeah,
which it look. Oh no, yeah, he because there's stairs that lead up to this thing. It looks like he's using them as a floor. They look
Well, in the next screenshots, he also has them on like the dirt floor. I also have to know that when you're making maps in RPG Maker, please learn how to use the shift button because there's grass edges around everything in these maps, right?
Yeah.
And that just looks really bad. Really,
also,
really, really bad.
Also, for interior shots, you really shouldn't have your shadows. Like, those shadows that are there, I think those should be gone in interior shots just because there's no sunlight shining over everything, you know?
Well, I mean, it could be a stylistic thing, but yeah, for the most part, he probably just didn't do anything with it. Like, he doesn't know how to use the shift button when he's using auto tiles, clearly. And I could probably say the same for the shadows. He just let the system make some auto shadows and just left it at that.
Yeah. This is where some getting familiar with the map editor in Ace could really help you out to improve the look of things. But also, if you're making a cave, it should look like a cave. So you should be using more rocky walls. These looks like you're in a secret castle because you're using these kind of ruins castle type things. So your name is not consistent with what you're doing. And you got these volcano rocks, which, like Des said, there's this red glow beneath them. And that's usually because they're near some kind of source of lava and they're in this volcanic cave. So that's an inconsistency there. And then you've got your roof tiles where you've got skeletons and stuff on the top when they're supposed to be your roof. There shouldn't be anything there because there's a ceiling above you. So it just looks like he's in a pit and somebody can see you from the top. So
yeah, well, maybe it is. I mean, whatever. We haven't played the game yet.
This is true. We haven't. But that's the impression I get. And if you don't want that impression, then
you look down a little further and there's the pits on the ground, and they're like a whole bunch of single pit tiles.
Yeah.
Where there's actually a tile in the RTP where you can make it look like a solid pit in front of you, blocking the way.
Yes.
I mean, maybe like there's a reason for that. Maybe there's a puzzle and he has to like close them up or something, but it looks really, really, really awkward.
Yeah.
Especially with the grass around
the edges.
Another
thing that looks awkward is it's supposed to be a cave, but he's got the walls being single tiles in some places, and he shows the outside wall when it should just be a wide swath of ceiling tile because it gives the impression that your walls are 1 foot thick and then there is nothing. It's like there's just what's outside. So once again, it looks like he's an abandoned ruin or a castle instead of a cave.
Yeah, and again with the ceiling tiles, it could really benefit from using the shift button. Because I hate these ceiling tiles where it's only one tile thick and you can see the front and the back of it and it's just really awkward looking.
Yeah.
Like, if you just make it look like it's going on into blackness, then it looks a lot smoother.
Yeah. Or on the volcano tile where he doesn't even let the ceiling tile go all the way up.
Yeah,
he just kind of stops midway through the waterfall.
Yeah, and then there's the outskirts of the Forgotten Forest, which I don't know if we needed a whole. Oh, and he uses
the entrance to the park because then there's a bridge.
He uses beach water with sand around the corners of it in
a
really awkward way. Yeah, like the more I look at these, and the same thing with his cliff, right? The one that's right above the water.
Yeah.
That normally there would be like borders around the part that's coming out a little bit, but there's not. He really needs to learn how to use the shift button when he's using auto tiles.
Well, no, for the border, you don't use shift on that one. To get the effect he wants where it's got the border thing, he had to make the wall come down one tile more. Actually, no, I think he used the shift for that. Because you can see the wall doesn't have a bottom near the stairs. Like, he actually used shift for that entire cliff face to be one solid thing. He didn't want that separation, which
makes no sense.
You shouldn't fight it. It's supposed to be there. But yeah, so yeah, he used shift for that entire wall.
He's using it in the wrong places.
Exactly.
All right, so then there's a house. I mean, the same kind of criticism that we've given to most houses, it seems kind of open. But the biggest problem I have with this house is that chandelier that's just hanging in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
I've seen this a lot with these Celiana tiles. And I'm not 100% certain, but usually when there's stuff that can hang from the ceiling, you have ceiling beam tiles, where it's just like a plank of wood that goes across the top of the screen and you can walk under it, and it looks really nice. You can hang stuff from it.
Yes.
When it's just kind of floating there in the middle of the room, it looks really, really weird.
Yes. Looks terrible.
Like, I would strongly suggest against making chandeliers that just sort of sit in the middle of the floor like that.
Yes. Avoid that. The spacing's not too bad in this. I like the.
It's not
this
too
house
bad.
Doesn't look too open. This looks fine.
Yeah, I mean,
what
especially
I
if it's like an important house, right?
Is
like, it's
blowing
just house.
Sword in the bedroom.
Maybe it's important. Like, maybe it's not just a house. It says house, but it might be like an important area. Maybe it's, you know, somebody special's
She's
house.
She's got a shrine and a glowing sword in her bedroom. Something about this bitch ain't right.
I wonder what she does with that sword.
It's like Men in Black. It's like, no, there's something wrong with that dude. He's just benching. How would I feel if somebody busts a cap in my ass when I'm just trying to work out? But Susie, she's out here with all these monsters with physics books. They're way past her age. I'm telling you, Susie's up to some shit.
That was a good scene. All right, then there's Town of Duke.
That is what I gleaned from this screenshot.
Yeah. Then there's the Town of Duke, which again shows some problems with the... He doesn't know how to use shift on the floor, on the ground auto tiles.
So this is Duke, huh?
This is Duke, huh? And then there's just some more towns. Then there's Ferdinand Village,
Oh my god, yeah, he used this like kind of pathway which got a dirt around it next to the other thing. God damn, just consistency, consistency, consistency.
Yeah.
And then a gigantic inn with an organ. See, the inn's not that bad. He could use some better tile work with the counter space for the bar. But overall, it's not that bad. Oh yeah, another floating chandelier.
I think if you're gonna use chandeliers this way, at least put a shadow, like a tile or two below them.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's floating and not just there. It looks almost like there's just a birthday cake on the floor.
I think he's adjusted the resolution to make it look like he's got a letterbox thing going on. Because notice the black borders on the top and bottom of the screenshots?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think he's...
Which is fine. I mean, that's okay.
Adjusted the screenshots.
That's not a bad thing. That. No, not the screenshots, in the game. Because if you look at the battle system screenshots...
Yeah, my bad. He adjusted the actual game to do that. Because, yeah, you got this other screenshot where he's showing a map thing. It doesn't have the borders on it, but it's also not the same resolution as everything else. So, yeah, he's used Yanfly's script to adjust his resolution. So now he's got black borders on the top and bottom to give it kind of a letterbox feel, which is sort of a nice touch. It's interesting. I just noticed that because I'm like, oh, hey, why aren't their ceiling tiles going up? I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's his border.
Yeah, but let's jump to the battle system screenshot. And it looks really bad there because the menu goes beyond the border.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's awkward. That's really awkward. Those are Holder's Battlers. I recognize those.
Yeah. Holder's Battlers mixed with some kind of side view battler that I've never seen before with these giant bee scythe creatures.
I don't like this.
You don't like it?
This is another inconsistency. Is your battle backgrounds don't have enough... Like, the forest floor needs to be twice its height because you've got a guy who's basically standing almost on the tree.
Yeah.
And then what else was it? So you got your world map that looks... World map's eye. Not too bad.
I mean, it's nothing special. Just RTP world map there.
I will give him something, though.
Out of your menu screen, yeah, which you really don't need.
Solomon, what are you going to give him?
Well, above the world map, if you look at this, I'm assuming it's someone's house. I like how he went ahead and shaded like the outside of it, you know, that you, there's little barrels on the side and you could see the outside of the house. Now, I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if he mixed up maps or anything, but I haven't seen that in any of the other RPG Maker games I've played before.
Yeah, a lot of games don't do that these days. That was something that was done a lot in the RPG Maker 2000 era.
And Super Nintendo. Like, yeah. Lufia did that. Dragon Warrior did that. Except with Dragon Warrior, you walked into a house and then the roof disappeared. And then, but yeah, you could walk around like that. And I think Phantasy Star might have done that at a time, but there were a few old school RPGs that did that, where they had just the roof open, and you could just walk into the houses, and the houses would be part of the map instead of having the houses be a separate map.
Yeah, Don Miguel's sample game for RPG Maker 2000 did that too. And as a result, a lot of 2000 era games did that as well.
Yeah. The only thing that I dislike about this is the fact that it's not consistent across the board. Like, this is another thing about consistency. You don't have your houses act like this for some houses, and then the rest of your houses don't behave like that.
Yeah, because there's the other house above with the guards and this flaming sword, and it doesn't have that effect going on. It's just a black background. So it's like, make up your mind, right?
Yeah, so if you're in a town and you've got houses, or pretty much if you're in any type of... if you're on any map that has a house and you walk up to the house, it should all behave the same way. So if you go to a separate map with some houses, all your houses should go to a separate map. If all your houses are on the same map, they should all be on the same map.
Yeah, just pick one or the other and stick with it.
Yeah. Consistency, consistency, consistency.
And then there's a few more shots of the battle system, which, I mean, we get the idea. And I think that's enough for screenshots. After screenshots, he has a list of scripts that he's using,
which is completely unnecessary.
Not only is it unnecessary, it kind of shows... I say it a lot. I don't like when people just throw scripts into their game. And when you put a list like this into your project thread, it kind of says, hey, look at all the cool scripts I grabbed off the forums and shoved into my game.
Yeah. It's really necessary. Like, for my own topic, when I put scripts, I just put scripts and I list the people who made my scripts. So I go Yanfly, Jet, Neon Black, shit like that. I'm just like, these are the people. I've credited the people who do it. But you don't need to credit each individual script. You don't sit through Final Fantasy and you sit there, you've got programmers. you don't have this programmer made this and this and this and
this. Yeah, like, that's how I would do it. Like, in the end credits of my game, it would say programmers, and it would say Jet, and it would say Fomar and all the people who helped me work on it. I wouldn't be like, I used Yanfly's core engine.
Yeah, you don't need to attribute every single script. This is something that is kind of something we do in the RPG Maker community that is kind of a thing we don't really need to do. We don't need to say what every script we're using is. We can just, all we need to credit is the people whose scripts we've used. So you can say, you know, scripts, yeah, and then list the people. So, you know, you got Yanfly and Victor and Modern Algebra and Mog Hunter. And that would have been four names and you're done. A single line, that's it. And we would have get it. We go, oh, he's using Yanfly scripts. We don't need to know each script you're using, because all that's doing is perpetuating the whole, oh, he's got that in his game. Oh, I want to know how I can get that. And then you go and you get it. It's like, meh. Or maybe he's just trying to cover his butt and go, I don't want to use a script and then not credit him. But if you're trying to credit people who are using scripts, I mean, unless the scriptwriter themselves are explicitly stating credit my name plus every script
and
you
nobody
use,
says that.
All you really need to do is just say, I'm using so-and-so scripts, and you're
covered.
Yeah,
like, that's a problem with the RPG Maker world that we're in today, I think. People are just a little too credit-scared, if that makes sense, right? Like, I've seen a lot of people on the forum say, you have to credit this person here and here. It's like, why? It's my thread. I'll credit them, you know, in the credits of my game. Like, you don't have to be you don't have to be so crazy about that kind of thing. Like, I recognize this graphic, you should credit them. It's like, why are you assuming that I don't? I don't have to put it right here. Right? People are a little overboard on that kind of thing these days, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like, just enjoy the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy making your game. I mean, as long as you attribute people's names, yeah, you're good.
Well, and then after that, there's chapter 4, and he talks about some planned features for that. With a dynamic world, secret endings, lore for town, which isn't really a feature, quests, side quests, a game-breaking choice. I'm like, a game, that sounds like a bug. Why would you add that in there? But I guess he means, like, it'll give you different quest lines and stuff that'll change the game in different directions. Achievements, yeah, whatever. Out-of-combat skills, which I like. I very much like things you use on the map to move. I mean, you can move things away. You can, you know, maybe set things on fire. That'd be really cool. I like that. But for the most part, nothing seems particularly special about this game.
Yeah, it looks kind of... The problem is when you're trying to make a game and you're going exactly... It's something we've mentioned quite a bit in different projects and in different podcasts, is you want to give your game its own identity. I mean... I think I said this in the last episode, but
I say it every
episode.
You want
to make your game feel familiar but different. And with this one, there's so much familiarity that it comes off as, I've played this game before, but better.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that sits there and goes, this is how my game sets apart. I mean, yeah, you guys have to realize, and girls, you have to realize that we are making games. So... Yeah, you can have a unique story, and yes, you can have unique characters, but especially when you're making a topic, which is essentially the back of the box of your game, it's your selling point of your game. You are marketing your game by making this topic. You're trying to get people interested in your game. You have to show off things that can catch people's attention, and the way that this project is being shown is it's showing off elements that are either not attention grabbing, or it's an information dump that isn't really relevant to what we need. I mean, when you want to show off your characters, all we care about is, you know, what do they look like? What's their name? And what role in the game do they play? So, you know, and at the same time, we want to be excited about those roles. Like, if I see a character in a game, it's like, oh, this is a monk. And I'm like, oh, I love monk characters. Yeah, I'm all about that. You know, or we've got, all right, this character is your healer. If you've just got generic girl who's priest, I'm like, don't care. But if you've got like, oh, they're, you know, a doctor or an herbalist, or they are a priest, but they're not just this simple, helpless girl like a battle priest, you know, mix it up a bit. Try and mix it up a bit. You don't want to be different for the sake of being different. Obviously, you want to be true to your character, but I mean, it kind of... is a strange thing to say when so many people want their healer type characters to be defenseless women. It's kind of propagating a stereotype. Like, I want to play with characters who are strong and badass. I mean, okay, and yes, it's inevitable. Persona 4, your healer character, or the one that fits that stereotype the most, is Yukiko, who is slightly defenseless / introspective, and she's your kind of priest type character. But she also has offensive fire abilities, even though she caters mostly to healing, and her personality throughout the game kind of grows. She is kind of she's girly, but at the same time, she doesn't seem just like a generic priestess that falls in love with the character, even though she is slightly a generic priestess that falls in love with the character. It's it's familiar but different. So that's, once again, this whole ramble summarized is you want to try and make your game feel familiar, but there needs to be something slightly different. There needs to be something that jumps out and kind of grabs you.
Yeah, so, this game doesn't really have that, I don't think.
Yeah.
Solomon, do you have any more thoughts about this game?
I'm really looking forward to what he plans to do with it, but for right now, I don't know. I'm not really too enthused about it, you know what I mean? Looking at it, like looking at a box, going to Walmart and spending, you know, $60 on a new game, I just don't see it right now, you know?
Well, think of it more of you're buying a game for your handheld. So it's more in the $30, $40 character. Well, think of it more as like it's your bargain bin, $20.
No.
$20 game? I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree there.
I don't think so.
Would you give this a play or a flay?
I give it a flay.
Yep, I agree there. There's a lot of things about this game that kind of look solid or well done, but even with that said, those same things are things that we've seen done before and better. Like, this is the kind of game that seems completely adequate in most areas and subpar in some areas, but not exceptional in any. So for that reason, I would absolutely give this a flay.
Yeah, I will also have to ring in the chorus with a flay, just because the game is lacking identity. It's lacking something that really reaches out. And, I mean, the topic is overall good. I mean, you're showing off screenshots, you're showing off scenery, but there's nothing. Your story doesn't really reach out and grab me. It's just there's an ancient relic and a guy with amnesia. And, I mean, you can have a cliche, but you got to work with your cliches to be a thing. It's just so many people are scared about, oh no, if they know too much about my story, spoilers. It's like, no, give us a bit more. You want to give us enough of the story so people care. I mean, there's excuse plot. And I mean, with my game, it's basically just there's an old tower. People want to go explore and people just go, okay, that's the story. I'll find out more when I go in. But the story's not what grabs them. It's just, oh, there's this cool art style and I know what the gameplay is. I know what to expect. And that's something I want to play. I'm going to be doing this. In this game, I have no idea what to expect. The gameplay, I don't know what type of gameplay it is.
I know exactly what to expect. I expect a generic RPG Maker game that doesn't stand out from any other RPG Maker game.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's more of, I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, this is somebody who's trying to be Final Fantasy and is, I can play Final Fantasy.
All right, so, three flays all around. You are welcome to try and prove us wrong or dispute us. Like I said, parts of this game could be a little more defendable, but so that's Violent Whispers in the Project Development Forum by Dark Metamorphosis.
There you go.
All right, so let's move on to our main topic for today. We're going to be talking about character development.
Yay!
Which is something a lot of people have been wanting us to do an episode about, and it's a subject that I'm a big fan of, as a big TV fan and a self-proclaimed writer.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so character development is huge. And it's a little different when you're... And, of course, I gotta mention that we're talking about character development in terms of story and writing, rather than, you know, oh, my character levels up, that's development. But when you're talking about character development in a game, it's a lot different than just in a story or a movie or a book where the entire story is the character development. In a game, the way I see it, character development, it's absolutely necessary. It should, you know, move the plot and all that. But at the same time, it's not really something that you can express through gameplay. So it's the kind of thing, well, I mean, you can in a lot of ways, and you should attempt to. But for the most part, it's the kind of thing that the story really, really takes a hold over. And when I think about character development in a game, I think about character development and I think about how the story uses it consistently throughout the game. Rather than say, you know, oh, I have amnesia, here's an artifact, let's go get it. I try to think about, you know, let's have the characters push the story. And the big way for me to do that, and for me, the heart of character development and character design in general, is about what a character wants. It's about a character's motivation. It's about a character's desire. And something you learn when you study writing is that a character's motivation is the core of that character. It's the thing that drives them in the story. It's the thing that drives all their actions and their thought processes. And it's their want. And that's really the pillar that holds the character, you know, straight. Otherwise, the character would just fall flat.
Yeah, that's usually what happens when if you get a character where people will go, wow, this character's doing something that seems really weird. It's something that defies what their motivation is. So you've got a character who's so focused on getting dominance and power, and then suddenly they help a kid, and you're like, that seems really out of place for that character because it's not in line with their goals. You don't have to blatantly declare what their goals are, but when you've kind of established what somebody's goals are and you kind of operate outside of those parameters, it can be kind of jarring to the player.
Yeah. And if you give a character something to do that conflicts with their wants and desires, that is character development because there's a reason for it. If there's no reason for that, then it's just like, where did that come from? But if you build up to it and then the character goes against what he wants, the character has grown. He's changed. And that's what character development is. It's about the change in the way a character thinks about what it is that he wants. I always say that the character's desire is the baseline for the character. And character development is the relationship between the character's desire and his actions. So when the relationship changes, when he thinks about what he wants in a different way, or if he wants it for a different reason, or if he realizes, hey, I don't want this anymore, that's what character development is to me. And it's something that should really take course over the entire story, his relationship with the thing that it is that he desires. And it doesn't have to be like a concrete object. It's not like, you know, hey, I want this object. That's a really, really, you know, shallow desire for a character to have. When I talk about a character's want, it's not, I want this object. It's, I want this object because, and it's the because that he really wants. Like, say he wants to rule the world. And he needs, like, you know, an ancient artifact to do it. It's not really the artifact that he's after. He's after the power. So what does the character want? He wants power. And that's the core of the character.
Yeah, it's very much with that. And but at the same time, I mean, the character needs to have a goal. And you don't want to veer away from that goal because then it seems out of character. But if you've got something, they do have to face obstacles in order to grow. So it's more of, there's a difference between goals and wants. What a character wants is he wants power. His goal could be, I want to get this power so I can do this thing. His wants could be, well, I want power and I want this to be easy. But when he reaches an obstacle where it's difficulty, if he goes, well, I can't have this easy even though I want it, but I have to reach my goal, I'm going to push past this, that's him growing.
Yeah, and if the character reaches that point and he says, well, this is too hard, then you have a weak character. Nobody wants to read about a weak character.
He's just like, I don't want to do this, and I'm not going to. Then it's like, all right, we've got no plot to move forward. But at the same time, you want to give them obstacles that reach near their threshold. But the higher the threshold is that they overcome, the more of an accomplishment it feels. But at the same time, you don't want to go too high of a threshold that the character overcomes it and it feels just kind of like a Mary Sue type thing. It's like, oh, they've got to fight a dragon and they just pick up a magic rock and the dragon dies. It's like, oh, there's this huge threshold and you pull this Deus Ex Machina to save them. It's just, But, you know, you look at Bilbo Baggins outsmarting Smaug and getting that whole scenario dealt with. It it's more of you've got this humble character that has this huge thing he's got to overcome that's totally drastic to what he wants, but his goal is to, you know, get this done, to be there for his friends, and he overcomes it. And it's like, holy crap, that was something amazing he did.
I think that if you look at characters as symbols, you have to consider that each one of your characters, again, has their own motivation, has their own drive. But what is that in relation to what you're trying to tell? I mean, it's not enough to have, you know, fantastic skills and have, you know, this Mary Sue healer who, oh my gosh, guys, quit fighting. We have to do something. La, 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 la. I know, blah, blah, blah. You know, why are they there? Why are your people together? What is the goal? How are you going to get there? And what happens to them?
In writing, we say, what is your theme?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, with your story, you have to have a theme. So, it's like if your theme is, you know, man overcoming nature, you want your story to always have obstacles that are your characters overcoming this natural obstacle, or, you know, man versus God. It's, you know, them coming to terms with that whole crap. You don't want to have man versus nature being your theme, and then suddenly they have, you know, nothing that has to do with them overcoming nature. It's You want to have your beginning, your middle, and your end, your core mission, and you want stuff to stick to that core mission. Anything that veers off of it is kind of, you're just wasting time, and it's you're becoming convoluted. So, you know, it, and even me personally, coming up with a theme and thinking strictly of a theme is kind of difficult to wrap my head around, because I'm like, it's a bit too abstract. So what I like to do is I like to basically summarize my story into one sentence, and or even in a game, I want to summarize my game in one sentence. So for my project, it's just there's an ancient tower and a group of people explore it. So that's my core thing. So whatever I'm going to put in my game or put into my story, it's going to revolve around people exploring this ancient thing. So, you know, and through that I discover, all right, so my theme is discovery. So then I want to, whenever I'm putting in my story, I want the thing to be discovery. So I've got my characters discovering themselves. I've got my characters discovering things about this tower. I've got my characters discovering things that were going on that they didn't realize was going on. That's just more of, you know, more of situation about the people they're interacting with. So, but the common thing that you want everybody to attribute to is they're discovering things. So that's my theme. If my theme was, you know, overcoming hardship, then I'd want them to constantly becoming, you know, overcoming hardships. So it's kind of a difficult thing to wrap your head around, or it can be something difficult to wrap your head around, but it ties in with consistency. You want your story to go on a flow. You want it to go on this track.
Yeah, and especially when you talk about the track and what you mentioned before about overcoming obstacles to reach their goal, you have to remember that you can't start off with them overcoming this massive obstacle and then the obstacles get easier over the course of the story. They have to get harder. So you want to start with something small. And it reminds me of the Hound in the Game of Thrones. And a little bit of a spoilers here, but it's established early on that he's afraid of fire because his brother put his face in a fire when he was a child. And then, like, that's his big fear. He's a really cool, he's a big tough guy, but he's horrified of fire, which is really, it's awesome, I think, because he's such a strong character otherwise. So there's this big battle at King's Landing, is the main city, and there's fire at the battle, and he's terrified of the fire, and he runs away. And you're like, wow, that paid off big. Like, you know, this major character, he ran away from the battle. But then later on in the next book, there's another scene with him that involves fire, and he gets like the whole side of his arm gets burned off, and it's like, wow, that paid off even more. So it's like the first time around, you know, you learn he's scared of fire. Then the second time around, you know, he runs away from fire because there's so much of it. The third time around, he's actually thrown into the fire. So it gets bigger and harder for him to overcome every single time. And I mean, he's not a hero. He's not even a villain. He's just sort of, you know, he's one of those middle ground type characters, which are all over the place in Game of Thrones. Nobody's really good or bad. But the idea is that whatever your character is up against, whatever his challenges are, they should get larger in scale and larger in how direct they are attributed to that character in terms of what he has to overcome.
Yeah, it's you want the challenges to become progressively more difficult. So you want it so it's not just, oh, I fought a dragon and now I'm going to fight a horse and then a dog and then a monkey. It's you think of it like a mountain. You want obstacles to slightly ramp up until you reach your climax. And then once you're going down the mountain, that's just your resolution. That's just the very peak of the mountain should be that top major huge obstacle. And then once they've overcome that, the rest of your story is just tying up loose ends and resolving what just happened until you reach your ending where it's just, all right, everything is settled. Unless, I got to leave a cliffhanger for the sequel. Which is so common nowadays. But Solomon, what are your thoughts on character development?
I believe that, again, when you go into character development, you've got to make sure that they're there for a purpose. It's, you know, you walk around and you talk to NPCs, and I know that you guys have talked about this in a prior podcast, that, you know, this guy is owning a bakery, he's selling, you know, pieces of bread for 50 G's. Why? What is his motivation to do it? And you have your main characters that you're going with throughout the whole game. And if they're not changing, if they're not interacting, if you're just running around killing slimes and, you know, raping monkeys or whatever, then it's not really coherent to what the story is trying to represent.
Yeah, like the player can have the opportunity to do that kind of thing. But if the story pushes them there, if the story says, you know, oh, go kill, you know, 50 slimes to accomplish this quest, that thing sounds like a side quest. The player should be able to do that if he wants to, but like that's not providing any challenge to the character for the characters to overcome, and there's no character development there, so there's no story there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and so much so as considering what that baker has to do or what the NPCs have to do, you don't exactly have to tell the player what those characters' motivations are. It's something you want to consider as you're making the game, as you're writing it. Because if you keep those things in mind and you keep those notes while you're developing it, something that character may have more relevance later on in the story, or that's something that could tie into that whole thing. So you've got, like, with the baker example, you've got this baker and he's selling his bread, and he's selling this bread because he's got to provide for his family. And maybe his bread is a little bit overpriced. Why? Because, well, taxes are higher. And why are the taxes higher? Because you've got this evil baron who's overtaxing the people. So then you've got the players now have to go and fight the evil baron. You've created an obstacle and an objective just because this baker was charging too much for bread.
Yeah, so, it goes into world building, right?
Yeah.
Like, the way the world itself affects character development because they react to changes around them.
Exactly.
And that's the next thing I wanted to talk about, is how the environment shapes the character development. It's at the core level, there's the characters, what he wants, and then there's, you know, antagonistic forces that are preventing him from getting there. But then at the same time, he can develop in smaller ways along the side that has to do with the environment and has to do with the people around him and his surroundings. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about the romance between the two heroes, because that's in a lot of games. You know, it's a cliche, it's a trope, but it's worth talking about as an example. Because I wrote an article for Valentine's Day about romance, and I wrote about how the romance has to develop over time. And if the characters are with each other for so long, you know, they're going on this quest together, give them the opportunity to talk to each other, give them time to develop with each other, rather than just, you know, point A to point B. I mean, a lot of people might get a little almost bored with too many side conversations, but I think that conversations between characters, if they show growth, if they show the characters growing closer or farther apart, if it shows conflict between those characters, that can go a long way towards character development and pushing the story forward.
If there's one example that I have of that, it's from Final Fantasy X. I know it's kind of cliche because it is Final Fantasy, but I remember where you meet a certain, I guess, kind of, I don't want to call him a main character, but kind of a side character. And he's, you know, a really great and important part of the story. And they have these preconceived notions of him. His character development is already laid out. You see him kick some ass. You're like, this guy is the most, you know, awesome guy ever. And then you have a conversation with him, and he says, well, you know, I may have done something bad, but pretend like I didn't say it. And then everyone kind of just looks and turns at him, and that one sentence drastically changes how you see that character. It could take one certain scene or one battle or one line for your audience to see, you know, a different side of your character, making them three-dimensional.
Talk about Orin.
I'm talking about Maester Seymour.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, yeah, where you think he's just a pompous rich guy, and then you find out he's wicked bad guy. Yes. Although at the same time, the viewer can kind of draw that already from his personality, because, I mean, with Final Fantasy X in particular, I was playing through that, and as soon as I saw Seymour, I'm like, I don't like that guy.
Right.
Something fishy about that guy. His hair is too perfect.
His robes are too elaborate.
He's too fancy. He must be evil. But yeah, so what so but yeah, no, that's true. It's where you definitely you can use certain scenes that can kind of change how you perceive a character. I mean, I'm going to bring up Persona again, but and spoilers, but in Persona 3 there's like you're basically your teacher. And throughout this time, you just think he's this goofy oddball that cracks a lot of puns now and then. And he's just like, oh, hey, I'm the guy that puts your stuff together and helps all this stuff out. And you're like, all right, he's just this wholesome dad figure, whatevers. And then you find out later on in the game, he's just this complete psychopath who's, you know, trying to do this whole culty thing. And you're like, I did not see that coming at all. And now this character who was mildly annoying but slightly lovable is now this character I just really hate. So it's interesting to see. That's how you get those kind of twists. Is you've got this certain character to be established a certain way, and then they do this thing that is not completely outside of their character. It's just kind of like, wow, I didn't think they would do that. But at the same time, it makes sense that they've done that. And you also, to kind of push that along, is kind of drop hints that they might be that way, but you also don't want to make those hints be so blatant that you're just kind of like, this guy's up to something. It's just kind of, you want to drop hints where it's, oh wow, I didn't think he would do that. That's kind of weird. Game of Thrones does that a lot with their characters, where you think a character's a certain way, but when you find out they're actually completely different, you see those hints here and there of, oh, that makes sense. This meant he was actually like that. But while you're traveling with this character, you don't think they're like that. Those hints don't really jump out at you until it's too late.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to mention, how it's all about character development. If something happens that's, you know, seems like it's almost like a twist or out of the blue, you have to plant the seeds along the way. And it's really, really effective when you go back and replay the game and then you catch those seeds. And you say, oh, this is because this is going to happen. And, you know, they're hinting at it. You know, a character development, it can't just twist out of nowhere. You can't, like, have somebody just, you know, go, you know, oh, yeah, all along I was evil. And, you know, where did that come from? Kane. But if he says little things that hint at it, or, you know, in the other direction, a character who turns out to be good. You know, I was working with you guys all along, like Snape from Harry Potter.
Yeah, and, oh, that was so good. And then you go back and you're like, oh, yeah, he did this and that made perfect sense. Because he was doing something to help, but it seemed like it was doing something to hurt. So, and you can also have the characters voice their assumptions. Because when the characters go like, oh, this guy must be bad because he's doing this, the player kind of goes along like, yeah, you're right, that you've got a good point. And then you point out, no, this person was wrong all along. They were actually doing this for these reasons. And you're like, oh, that makes sense. Oh, it adds a novelty to it. People are like, oh, oh. That's the reaction you want when you have a twist. You want somebody to go, oh. To me, that's happens. It's like, I did this. You don't want them to go, eh. You want them to go, oh.
Yeah, it's totally true. And Snape's a really, really good example of that.
But yeah, no, that's very true, especially with the Snape example, is being able to drop the sense. And how you can do that in your own game is when you're developing it, just jump straight to that plot twist. Go, when you're creating your outline, you're like, all right, at this point, I want this character to do this big shocking thing. And then once you've got that established, you're like, all right, with Snape's example, like when you're planning out the entire Harry Potter series, you're like, at the end, you want it to be Snape is in love with Harry's mom and he's going to do this huge thing because he made a promise to look after this kid, but he hates this kid. So throughout that thing, you're like, all right, I want to put in these points where whenever he helps Harry, it seems like he's doing it in a way that hates him. Or I want everyone throughout the story to think, oh, this guy's an asshole, until the very end when you realize he's actually an awesome guy. So I want him to do awesome things, but I want them to be perceived when he does this awesome thing that it's for asshole-ish reasons. So that when you find out what your end goal is, then you can start sprinkling throughout the story these hints and how you want to paint them.
Yeah, and as always, that comes down to what the character wants, his core desire. Like, everything that he does has to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Snape hated Harry, but at the same time, he made a promise to someone he loved to look out for him. So he does it kind of begrudgingly. And that's just part of what the character wants. He wants to honor Lily's memory, but he also just dislikes Harry because Harry both reminds him of Lily, but also of Harry's dad. So it was just, so well done. So well done. But yeah, I think we've kind of established what our thoughts are on character development. So what do you guys think? Solomon, what are your final thoughts on the subject?
I think character development is just very vital to your game. You know, graphics are great. RTP, not so much. Music's awesome. But if your characters aren't going, if they're not doing something, if it's not meaningful, then why the hell are you making a game to start with?
Yeah, to me, in a story, character development is super important because I think that a good story is totally driven by the characters and what the characters want. Like, I don't like the story where, you know, oh, something happens and the characters just react to it. I want the characters to really drive the story. And the way to do that is by putting character development and character desires at the forefront and have it motivate them in every action that they take.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. Like, I'm the same way. A lot of games and a lot of shows and stuff I like are purely character-driven. I mean, that's why I like games like Persona. That's why I like shows like Game of Thrones, is throughout that, the characters are driven by their desires, and the story progresses about what these characters want. So, I mean, you've got your overlying plot thread, but at the same time, this thread is affected and moved and shifted due to what the characters want. So, I mean, you can have Game of Thrones, which is essentially it's going to be this huge battle between good and evil, but how the forces are changed and how these shifts are moved is just, all right, you've got this character that wants this, you've got this character that wants this, and then you've got this character that wants this and has been setting up what they want the entire time, and you don't really realize it until reveal. Oh. So, yeah, those are my final thoughts. I agree with what everyone else said, is character development is extremely important to the story of your game, to the story of anything. When your story is progressing, if you don't want your characters to feel flat and meaningless, their purpose and their drive needs to be very prevalent. Or at least for your main characters, they need to know what those characters want. Your side characters and your antagonists, you want to at least have what you at least want to have an outward motive before you reveal a true motive, or have their true motives on the outside if you want, but you just character motivation and how they develop is very integral to all that. So moving on, we're going to discuss the question of the week. But before we discuss the question of the week, we're going to discuss last time's question of the week. And that question was, how do you make your dungeons interesting? So one thing somebody pointed out, John Sun, he was talking about Etrian Odyssey's approach to dungeons, and the way they do that is they're just straight-up mazes, and the game gives you motivations to delve deeper into the dungeons, where it's more powerful enemies, more loot, and all that jazz. And a really cool thing they do with that is they let you make the maps as you travel, so it gives kind of a feeling of it adds to the feeling of exploration. You're not only just exploring these dungeons, you're also mapping them as you explore. So it just really, that's just change of instead of maps being auto-filled out like it is in a lot of RPGs, you actually filling out the maps yourself, it's the difference that makes you feel more of like you're an adventurer. It gives more of an Indiana Jones vibe. And so how he was saying is how that ties into making dungeons interesting is having subtle changes like that is something you can do beyond just throwing in puzzles and switches and whatnot to give obstacles. So it's the main point of that is it's not so much providing obstacles to the player, but you can make your dungeons interesting by thinking of how the player interacts with the environment and how that relates to storytelling and whatnot. So that was the major reply we got for last week's question. But this week, we're going to discuss how do you develop your characters? But beyond that really broad question is what type of things do you do to make to let the player know the characters are being developed? So, you know, do you have a journal that covers what the person's thoughts are? Write a list at home of what each character's motivations are and then think of how you portray them in the game. So to summarize a short, how do you portray character development in your game? Or how do you develop your characters in planning stages? So two questions of the week, really. But through that, take your pick and whichever one you want to answer. If you want to answer both, go for it. But that is question of the week for this week. And I believe we're just going to wrap up the podcast at this point. Despain, if you would do the honors.
Yep. As always, you can reach us on finalbossblues.com. Leave your responses, leave any thoughts, leave your answer to this week's question of the week. We'll get to that for the next podcast. And in addition to finalbossblues.com, you can reach us on our Facebook page at Final Boss Blues. You can like us there, follow us on that, so you can always keep up to date with the newest podcasts, the new articles, the new video tutorials, that kind of thing. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Final Boss Blues or at Raynard Frost. And as always, you can leave us a reply and check up on the conversation on the RPG Maker web forum thread. So this has been Despain with my regular host Raynard Frost, and I have to thank our special guest host Solomon for joining us today.
See you later.
Adios.
And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.